recording. Okay, right.
Is that working?
Yep.
Anyway, good afternoon. Thank you for coming. And I hope that my ramble won't annoy you too much. I don't see very well, so I might make a few blunders and mistakes. But I've got notes here. Anyway, this is a literary ramble around Nottinghamshire. Of people I've been interested in for a long time. Now, let me start off by saying that one of my heroes is William Wilberforce, who was born in Hull, and as you know, he was an anti-slavery campaigner. He lived from 1759 until 1833, but he was the nephew of a certain Abel Smith, who was a notable banker from Wilford in Nottingham, who lived at Wilford House, which is still there, and I don't know whether you know, it's opposite the Harvester at Wilford, near Wilford Lane tram stop. And he spent a lot of time with his uncle, Abel Smith, and from 1786 until 1789, he used to spend a lot of time there drafting his first bill to abolish the Atlantic slave trade. Now, when he was at Wilford, he met a very young man called Henry Kirk White, who, although born in the Shambles in Nottingham, which is where the council house now is, obviously a butcher's, he was very poorly, and he spent most of his time in Wilford. And he used to spend a lot of time under the gazebo at St. Wilfrid's Church, which is still there, and he wrote lots of poems there. Now, it's very sad. He died only aged 21 at St. John's College, Cambridge. But he spent a lot of time at Wilford, and William Wilberforce actually got to know him, and he gave Henry Kirk White £20 to help him on his way. And he's known for two things, a very well-known poem, I don't know whether you've ever come across it, it's called On Clifton Grove, and also for the hymn, Oft in Danger, Oft in Woe. And as I say, he spent a lot of time in the gazebo at St. Wilfrid's Church in Wilford, which is still there. And he died, sadly, aged only 21, at St. John's College, Cambridge, where he's still buried. Now, let's go to somebody else, if I can read my writing. Thomas Gray, who was a great friend of Frederick Montagu, who owned Papelwick Hall. I don't know whether you've been there, it's a very nice place. Thomas Gray is very well known for writing the famous poem Elegy, written in a country churchyard. The first line of which is the curfew tolls the knell of passing day. Now, I went there about 20 years ago, and I got talking to the then owner of Papelwick Hall, who was called Dr. Godwin Austin, and I think he must be a relation of the famous mountaineer, after whom a mountain in somewhere in Asia is named, but he was a senior physician in the Queen's Medical Centre. And at Papelwick Hall, there is a curfew bell, and Dr. Godwin Austin was convinced that Thomas Gray was a very frequent visitor to Papelwick Hall, and Dr. Godwin Austin was convinced that Thomas Gray might have got the idea for this famous poem from his visit to Papelwick Hall. And I remember, it's gone now, sadly, but there was a memorial to Thomas Gray in the garden of Papelwick Hall, but it's disappeared, unfortunately, because I had a look for it a few weeks ago, and it's not there anymore. Now, two women authors who sadly went out of favour and people stopped reading them. The first one is Dorothy Whipple, who lived from 1893 until 1966. Her husband was Henry Whipple, who was the Director of Education at Nottingham City Council. And I've got an article written by him in about 1938 in which he said that High Pavement Grammar School was going to move from Stanley Road to Bestwood. And that was in 1938. So obviously the war prevented the move until after the Second World War. Now, J.B. Priestley described Dorothy Whipple as the 20th century Jane Austen. And they lived, she and her husband, Henry Whipple, lived at 35 Ebers Road in Mapley Park, and the Civic Society have now put up a blue plaque to Dorothy Whipple. And about 15 years ago, a bookshop in central London, near where I used to work, started republishing her books. It was called Persephone Books in Bloomsbury, but they've now moved to Bath. And Dorothy Whipple, they reprinted all of her books. And Dorothy Whipple's books have become the most popular reprint books of the last 15 or 20 years. And as I say, her husband was Henry Whipple, who was Director of Education at Nottingham City Council. And I think, is there not a primary school in Rice Park near that? Yeah. Yes?
Henry Whipple, Infant St. Jude's.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I went to both of those.
Okay, well, it's named after him.
And the infant school, Henry Whipple Infant School, was the site where High Pavement moved to, and the old grey huts with that were classrooms became the tuck shop for High Pavement.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I didn't know that, but certainly Dorothy Whipple was very, very popular back in the 1940s and 50s, but her books with Persephone books, and it's worth Googling them, they've become very popular. And I've got a friend who's collected all of her books. Now, the other female author from Nottingham that I've heard of, because I knew her son, who was a barrister in Nottingham, she's called Hilda Lewis. And she and her husband, Professor Maurice Lewis, Professor Maurice Lewis was Professor of English at Nottingham University back in the 1940s and 50s. And Hilda Lewis lived from 1896 until 1974. And she's noted for historical novels and children's books. And she moved, they were a Jewish family, and they were both very heavily involved in the synagogue on Shakespeare Street. And they moved from London to Nottingham, the family, in 1920. And she, as I say, she married Professor Michael Lewis, who was Professor of English, and he had a particular interest in teaching deaf children to read and write. Her 1946 novel, which, let me look at this, was called The Day Is Ours. She wrote a 1946 novel called The Day Is Ours, which was made into a 1952 film starring Jack Hawkins and Phyllis Calvert. Now, I've never seen it, but her novel became this 1952 film with Jack Hawkins, who I'm sure you've all heard of, and Phyllis Calvert, who, again, I've heard of, but I don't know what else she's been in. And I've got to know their son, Humphrey Lewis, who was a barrister in Nottingham, and that's one of the reasons why I got interested in the law. And they lived at a beautiful big house on Mansfield Road in Sherwood, called Kenwood, near what used to be, and I think it still is, just almost opposite the Sherwood Methodist Church. And it was a beautiful big house, and that was where they lived in Mapley Park. Now, I'm sure you've all heard of Graham Greene, the famous novelist. He's noted for Brighton Rock, The Third Man, and Our Man in Havana. Now, he worked very briefly in Nottingham for the Nottingham Journal, and the office is now sadly almost derelict, It's a Watson Fothergill building on Upper Parliament Street, not far from the Victoria Centre. And he worked there from the 1st of November 1925 until the 1st of March 1926. And he just worked there very briefly, Graham Greene, and he said that Nottingham was a beastly place. He's recorded as saying that Nottingham was a beastly place. Now, the Theatre Royal, of which we all know, there's a very famous play, the longest running play in the history of the world, which had its world premiere at the Theatre Royal on the 6th of October 1952. It is, of course, The Mousetrap.
Yes.
And it starred Richard Attenborough and his wife, Sheila Sim. And there's a lady at church, who Carol knows, called Kath Hyde, who was there, an elderly lady at church, and saw Agatha Christie as she came on stage at the end of the play. And that was, Nottingham had a reputation as a place where it was a good place to do premieres before it went to the West End.
Can I just interrupt?
Yes.
Say I went as well.
Did you? Wow. So you saw Agatha Christie?
Yeah.
Wow. Stand up and take a bow and take a please. That's fantastic. That's great.
My landlady in Nottingham at the time was a great theatre girl.
Oh, wow.
And she took me along to see The Mousetrap.
Oh, wow. Well, that is amazing. Well, we're so proud to have you here today.
I hope you didn't describe it as rubbish.
Now, some of you, I'm sure most of you, will remember the place, the theatre that was next door to the Theatre Royal. It's called the Empire Music Hall, which sadly got demolished many years ago. Now, in 1940, two young men made their first ever appearance there in Jack Hilton's Youth Takes a Bow, a show. They were both 17, and they didn't know each other at the time. Eric Morecambe and Ernie Wise. They had their first ever, that's where they first met, at the Empire Music Hall in 1940. So they got friendly, and as they say, the rest is history. And that's where they first met. Now, next person I'm going to take, one of my heroes. Who's heard of Dudley D. Watkins? Nobody? He lived from 1907 to 1969. Although born in Cheshire, he grew up in Nottingham and he started working for Boots and did a lot of drawings for the Boots Company magazine. He is responsible for the original cartoons. Now, I'm a Scot. I don't know whether Gerald will remember this. Who's heard of the Brunes?
Yes. The Brunes.
Yeah, the Brunes. Urwally. Lord Snooty,
yes.
And Desperate Dan.
Yes.
He is responsible. He got recruited by D.C. Thompson in Dundee, yes. And he went up to Dundee, and he trained at the Nottingham School of Art on Waverley Street. And he went up to Dundee, and he created these characters, and he stayed there for the rest of his life, and he lived at a place called, I never know how to pronounce it. Is it Broughty or Broughty Ferry?
Well, I've heard it pronounced Broughty Ferry.
But that's where he lived anyway. But he trained at the Nottingham College of Art roughly at the same time as Dame Laura Knight, who again is very well known. Dame Laura Knight, she was the official war artist at the Nuremberg War Trials. And also she's very famous for theatre and circus paintings. And there's a blue plaque to her on Noel Street opposite the Forest tram stop. Because although she was born in Long Eaton, she actually grew up in Nottingham opposite the Forest tram stop. And there's a blue plaque there from the Nottingham.
There's a tram named after her as well.
Sorry?
There's a tram named after her.
Oh, is there? Okay.
There's also, Alex, a picture that she'd done in one of the university cafes.
Oh, right, okay.
Near the tram spot.
Okay.
And it's a large rural looking picture of a man and some children.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I don't know if anybody else has
seen it. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Now, somebody you all know, J.M. Barrie, Peter Pan, and all that stuff. He lived from 1860 to 1937, and he was born up in the northeast of Scotland. And for a year, he worked again at the Nottingham Journal at 38 Pelham Street in the city centre. Now, Carol and I both go to St Andrew's with Castlegate United Reformed Church, which in those days was St Andrew's Presbyterian Church. And there is always a claim that he came to our church, but nobody can prove it, I'm afraid. But he lived when he was in Nottingham for that year, 1883 to 1884. He lived at 5 Birkeland Avenue, just off Peel Street. And in order to walk through to his office on Pelham Street, he had to walk through the Arboretum. And it's generally believed that that's where he got the idea for Neverland. But whether or not it's true, we don't know. But it's also believed that he was walking down Clifton Grove and he saw a poor little boy, and that's where he got the idea for Peter Pan from. Again, we don't know. But I've got a copy of a book at home which he published in 1888, which describes effectively his year in Nottingham, and it's called When a Man's Single. And it's worth reading because it describes what it's like to come down to Nottingham from the northeast of Scotland when you're only in your 20s and trying to make a living as a sort of junior journalist. And it's called When a Man's Single, and it's worth a read.
There is a plaque, of course, the bronze plaque in Pelham Street.
Yeah, and there's also a plaque outside the house on Birkeland Avenue. There's also a plaque outside Birkeland Avenue, yes. Now, who have we got now? Mary Howitt. Who's heard of Mary Howitt?
Was that the wife of Cecil Howitt?
No, no relation as far as I know. Her husband was called William Howitt. They were both notable Quakers. Mary Howitt was born in the Forest of Dean, and her husband was born in Hena, not far away from here. They were both notable Quakers and became notable authors. They had a chemist shop on Parliament Street and lived in South Parade. Now, Mary Howitt is best known for writing The Spider and the Fly. Come into my parlour, said a spider to the fly. And she's very well known for that. And there is a statue, there is a sort of two statues of Mary and William Howitt outside the castle and also at Newstead Abbey. Let me have a look, what else? Yes, and in 1834, when they were living on South Parade, which is where, you know, it's just the southern end of the council house, they were paid a visit by a certain William... What's it called again? Sorry, let me read my writing. Oh! What's it called? Can you read it? William Wordsworth! They were paid a visit in 1834 by William Wordsworth when they were both living at South Parade in Nottingham. And she is most known for her famous poem, The Spider and the Fly. And they were both very, very notable Quakers. Now, somebody of my age, I come from a working class Scottish family and I wasn't allowed to do anything practical as a child. I was forced to go upstairs and read Arthur Me. Arthur Me's Children's Encyclopedia and The King's England. Now, although he was born in Stapleford, I don't know, is it Stabo or St Appleford? I never know. Stabo, I call it St Appleford. He lived from 1875 until 1943, and he's best known for, obviously, The Children's Encyclopedia and also King's England. But I hadn't realised until I did a bit of digging into this. He didn't stay in Stapleford for very long, and his family moved to somewhere where Paul will know, to the adjacent street from where I grew up, in St Anne's. He grew up on Manning Street, which I'm sure Paul knows. Next door, it was the parallel road to Robin Hood Chase.
One of my best friends at school.
But he grew up at Manning Street. And obviously he's a best known for the King's England and Arthur Meese Children's Encyclopedia. Now, here's
Arthur Meese Centre in Lucas.
It's closing. No, in Stapleford. It's closing, apparently.
Is it?
I saw in the paper that they've run out of money. It's running out of money. I'm told it's closing, unfortunately. Now, who's been to Lindby recently? About 15 years ago, I was reading a book, and in the churchyard at Lindby, there are 163 graves of poor children from St Pancras Workhouse, who were sent up to work in the Castle Mill, which is, you know, between Papelwick and Lindby, and they were literally worked to death. And there was another young boy who came from the St Pancras Workhouse called Robert Blinko. Anybody heard of him? Now, Robert Blinko, again, was an orphan from the St Pancras Workhouse, and he was born approximately in 1792, and at the age of seven, he was taken up to Gonalston Mill, and fortunately, he survived. And somebody wrote a biography about him. He was called John Brown. And who do you think read the biography? Charles Dickens. And it's generally believed that Robert Blinko was the inspiration behind Oliver Twist. Now, whether or not that's true, we don't know. But certainly Robert Blinko survived. Like most of his friends, he didn't die, and he lived until he died in 1860 when he was, 68? Which is remarkable in those days. And one of his sons became an Anglican clergyman, I believe. So he did all right, but nevertheless, John Brown wrote this biography of his life, of being taken up from St Pancras Workhouse and going to Gonalston Mill and surviving. And so some people believe that he was the inspiration behind Oliver Twist. Now, we come to somebody I really disapprove of, Lord Byron. Now, I don't know how many of you have been up recently to near the, what used to be the General Hospital on St James's Street. There's a plaque outside 76 St James's Street saying that Lord Byron stayed there between 1798 and 1799. Well, he did, because the General Hospital did exist in those days, and he had there a failed operation on his leg. And he stayed there to recuperate when he was about 12 or 13 and stayed with the Parkin family. And that was before he moved with his mother to the Burgage Manor in Southall before they moved to Newstead Abbey. Now, on a related theme, who's heard of Washington Irving? Everybody has. Rip Van Winkle. Now, he stayed at Newstead Abbey with the then-owner, Colonel Wildman, for 3 weeks in 1824. And he visited a certain village in Nottingham called Gotham, where the wise men of Gotham live. And I think the idea there was that in order to stop King John building a castle there and having to pay lots of taxes, they decided that to appear totally foolish and that King John wouldn't want to build anything there. And I think one of the stories is that they all sat there around trying to stop a bird escaping by putting their hands around it. But, you know. And he went down to Gotham and decided that Gotham, because of the wise fools, was highly appropriate name for New York, which he said was also full of wise fools. And that's how New York got the name Gotham City, which I believe is what it's called in the Batman stories.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But it's Washington Irving who's responsible for New York being called Gotham City, because he said that the people in New York were just as daft as the people in Gotham in Nottingham.
And that's where Batman lives.
Yes, Batman lives in Gotham. Yeah.
Batty.
Now, I now live in Hucknall, where I'm sure you know Lord Byron is buried. He's buried in the crypt in the St Mary Magdalene Church next to his daughter, the computer pioneer, Ada Lovelace, who was buried there in 1852. Now, on the 15th of June 1938, the then vicar of St. Mary Magdalene's Church had heard a rumour that Byron wasn't actually in the coffin. And so at midnight on that day, he went down into the crypt, and it was the first time it had been opened since 1852, and he noticed that the coffin lid was ajar. And he opened it, and there was Lord Byron, perfectly preserved. So he is there. Now, with regard to Lord Byron's funeral, he died in April 1824, and it took until July 1824 before he was brought to Nottingham, his body, because they wouldn't let him be buried in Westminster Abbey because of his appalling behaviour towards various women and so on. So he arrived in the city centre of Nottingham on the at 5 a.m. on the 16th of July 1824, and his coffin was placed in a pub at the top of Pelham Street called the Blackamoor's Arms, which is not there anymore, but it was opposite what's now the Thurland Arms. You know the Thurland Arms? There was a pub there called the Blackamoor Arms, and his coffin was there. And at 10:45 on the 16th of July 1824, they started the trip up Mansfield Road as far as 7 Mile House. Do you know that, on Mansfield Road? And then they turned left and went back through Papperwick and Lindby, and they eventually arrived at Hucknall at 4:15, and his coffin was put down into the crypt just before 4 o'clock on the 16th of July 1824. And I hadn't realised, because I mean I went to Durham University, and it was only about when I first went to see him. I don't really know that. It's a seaside village about 15 miles east of Durham. Hadn't realised that's where he got married. He married Anne Milbank, whose father was the guy who ran Seaham. And he abandoned her not long after the daughter Ada Lovelace was born. Ada was only 3 months old. And in his famous poem Don Juan, which Stanley Middleton taught us, he called Anne Milbank Lady Anne Millpond. Which sums him up, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. Now, D.H. Lawrence, we all know who he was. Mm-hmm. But if you go to Castlegate, almost where St. Peter's Church is, there is a plaque at the bottom of the junction of Castlegate and Listergate. Because for a short time in the summer of 1901, he worked there in Haywood's factory, which made surgical appliances. He worked there as a clerk, and he only worked there for a few months and hated it. He said it was the worst time of his life. But I discovered not that long ago, he ran off with his professor's wife. She was called Frieda von Richthofen, and his wife's husband was professor of English at what was then University College Nottingham. And he was Professor Ernest Weekly. And in 1912, he went up, when he knew that Professor Weekly wasn't there, he went up to see Frieda von Richthofen at their address on 32 Victoria Crescent, just off Private Road in Mapley Park. I don't know whether you know that.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he then seduced her and they ran off. Which is one of the reasons why, until the 1970s, Nottingham University refused to acknowledge his connection with Nottingham University. Because, of course, he ran off with Frieda von Richthofen, Professor Weekly's wife. So anyway, and I'm afraid I hope you don't mind. We're nearly at the end now. I hope you haven't been bored. Right, we're coming to somebody. I'm sure we all know Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable. Yes.
Yes,
It was written by the Reverend Ebenezer Brewer, whose son-in-law was, well, Brewer was an Anglican clergyman, but so was his son-in-law. And his son-in-law was the vicar of St. Andrew's on Mansfield Road, near the church, near the Rock Cemetery. Yeah. He then became vicar of Ruddington, and then he became vicar of Edwinstone. And Ebenezer Brewer moved in with his son-in-law and daughter in 1885 when they moved to Ruddington, and then he moved with them to Edwinstone. And that's where he was when Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable was published. And he's buried in, you can see his grave, he's buried in Edwinstone Parish Churchyard. So, I mean, I didn't know that until a few weeks ago, and I was looking at my own copy, because I hadn't looked at it for years, and I noticed that the preface to Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable is actually signed Ebenezer Brewer, Edwinstone, 1891. So he, you know, there's the connection. So, we're coming to the end now, and a few paviours who have, we all know about Stanley Middleton, so we don't need to talk about him too much. I think he was born in 1919, wasn't he? Mm. Lived on Caledon Road. And I think Graham very kindly sent the committee members a video of Peter Bowles'
This Is Your Life.
This Is Your Life. It was absolutely fascinating. And I hadn't realised that Stanley Middleton had this posh voice. I can't remember that at all. But and his daughter is now married to the bloke who runs A.W. Lynn's funeral services. Her picture's always appearing. But it's Penny, isn't it? Penny?
Yes. Nigel Rose. I knew Nigel Rose's parents.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, these are names which Graham very kindly supplied to me, and I didn't know anything about them. But first of all, there's an author called John Snaith, who lived from 1876 until 1936. He was a well-known cricketer and author, and he played cricket with a team of authors, which included A.A. Milne and J.M. Barrie and P.G. Woodhouse. So I don't know what his background was, but certainly John...
And Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
They're all notable cricketers, and John Snaith was an author, and you can Google him. And then there's another person, again, I didn't know, called Michael Standen, who, 1937 to 2008, who was a poet, a novelist, and a political activist, who finished up his career as director of the northeastern section of the Workers' Educational Institute. And I think he lived in Bishop Auckland, didn't he?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
He lived in Bishop Auckland. So, and then finally... we thought he might come today, but I don't think he has he? Martin Beardsley.
Yeah. No, he hasn't come today.
Now that's unfortunate, but anyway, he's an author of children's novels and books, and he's most noted for the Sir Gadabout series, which was on television a few years ago. So, there we are. I hope that's
it. Is he an old paviour then?
Yeah, they're all those people. Those three are all old paviours. Yes, yes. So anyway, that's what I've got to offer, and I hope it hasn't been too boring.
No. Just a couple of points on that.
Yes, please do.
Michael Standen, I think his first novel was written about the time, just after I think he left Haven.
Okay.
And it features strongly a school that closely resembles King's Prison. I think one of Stanley Middleton also did that. Also, there was it Harrison's Requiem that was set very much in King's Prison.
Yeah.
And the other one was John Collis Snape. Yes, he was a pupil of the science school.
Okay.
At High Bayment. That would have been at High Bayment.
Yeah.
And And yes, he was a prolific novelist as well. I think he wrote 46 novels up there. Covering a range of topics, actually.
Okay.
From all sort of, some were humorous, some were not. And his scripting was quite, he did play twice for the county.
Alex, you were in Scotland reading Arthur Mee's Children's Encyclopedia.
Well, no, I was in Robin Hood Chase in...
Robin Hood Chase was it?
I was in Robin Hood Chase, yes.
Were there about 10 or 12 volumes?
Oh, loads. My mum and dad got them from the charity shop. I had hundreds of volumes.
Right. Oh, crikey, because my grandmother's pride and joy in the parlour was a Bakelite shelf with about 12 editions of Arthur Mee's.
Okay.
I was allowed, providing I washed my hands first, I was allowed to go in there and to sit on one of the parlour seats and read the book.
Well,
and then she'd come and inspect it afterwards to make sure I hadn't turned
it. Well, it was reading Arthur Mee's Children's Encyclopedia when I was about six that I learned my first ever fact.
Yeah.
How many bones are there in the human body?
Oh, crikey, yes. Yeah.
206. And I learned that when I was six. But also, I mean, his King's England series is very good. I've got several of those.
But in every edition, there was a Robin Hood story.
Yeah.
In every edition.
Yeah. But I hadn't realised that as a kid they'd moved up to St Anne's and they lived on Manning Street, which was parallel to Robin Hood Chase, just up from. Do you know what's now the Pakistani Centre, which used to be the big Baptist church, designed by Watson Fothergill? Just up there on the right.
Alex, I really enjoyed that. I'm surprised, though, I don't know whether your source covers it, there was no mention at all about Alan Civitella.
I should have mentioned that one. Well, it's just that everybody knows about him. I don't think he ever did anything very interesting, did he?
I think it's down to a halt now, but a few years ago there was a bit
I didn't mention him. I didn't do it on purpose, but I didn't think he'd done anything very interesting, so... Sorry.
He's had two successful films.
Well, he did, yes.
But on the wider issue, a few years ago there was a campaign, which I hope it hasn't ground to a halt, to get Nottingham recognised as a city of literature, because you've got John Byron, you've got James Lawrence, you've got Stanley Middleton, who's not insignificant, you've got Senator we're talking about, and who's the lady who wrote the what's the children's Moon from Basing Grant?
Well, let me mention one more name, somebody whom I have met a few times. Who remembers Coronation Street 30 years ago when Gail Platt, Richard Hillman was trying to murder her? Do you remember that?
No.
And the man who wrote it lives on Ebers Road, Shirley Road in Mapley Park. He's called Stephen Lowe. And he wrote a fantastic play about 25 years ago about Brian Clough, which was on at the Playhouse. And the guy who was the star who appeared as Brian Clough was called Colin Tarrant, who was in The Bill. Do you remember him as the inspector in The Bill? And he sadly killed himself not long after this. But Stephen Lowe wrote this fantastic play and also wrote those wonderful scenes in Coronation Street when, at the end of when, after Richard Hillman had tried to kill Gail, it was like a pantomime. He would always look at the camera and grin. And that's the last time I watched Coronation Street. But Stephen Lowe lives on Shirley Road in Mapley Park, and I've met him a few times.
Could I mention Cecil Roberts?
Yes, please do, yes.
Well, I don't want to mention it. I'm wondering if you had done any research on it. Because he had the Friedman novel a book he wrote called Terrace in the Sun.
Okay. That's not a name I know.
Really in a similar mould to D.H. Lawrence's book.
Okay.
But Nottingham really took to him.
Okay.
Very, very strongly, given him Friedman.
Okay.
Of course, we don't even know him now. He was in the 1920s.
I've heard the name, but I don't know anything about him.
He lived in the Meadows.
Oh, right, okay.
And he also knew Laura Knight and was.
Another name I'm remembering when he mentioned Coronation Street, because there was a young man acted in it, but William Ivory, who lives out in Vale of Beaver but grew up in Southall, and he read, he's the main screenwriting. He wrote Colin's book, which was a successful series on television some years ago. He's written Dagenham Ladies. He's written more recently the last film that Glenda Jackson did with Michael Caine. He did a screenplay for that. He wrote a nice film called A Road to Knock. He's a fellow Notts County supporter. And he's and he grew up in Southall, so
okay.
Wow.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well,
well, ladies and gentlemen, I am deeply appreciative of what you've done for us, Alex, and I'm sure we all are. I thank everyone for coming. I'm sorry to see that there were not more of us here. Maybe it's because of the Christmas luncheon that I arranged, and I thought this one might not be worth coming to as a result of what they found then. So maybe John Chambers, who is always a good master of ceremonies, maybe you would like to arrange the next function and do a little bit better than we've done. I've done.
We have a committee meeting coming up in 2 weeks' time. We'll chew the fat and see what we've got.
Excellent.
I personally have a bent toward a bit of a musical gathering because the singing song of Christmas seemed to go quite nicely.
That would be very good.
If we've got enough willing volunteers to have a go at singing a song or playing an instrument or telling a silly monologue, it might add to a bit of fun. But if it's not serious enough, then.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we'll talk about that.
Okay, good.
Anyway, thank you, Alex.
Okay, no, pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you, everyone else.
Thank you for everybody. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, are we doing the school song? Yeah. Are we doing the school song?
I would like to hear us do the school song, yes.
Right, we're going to do the school song, are we? Those of you who need the words, but I think we've got the words in here, but do you need the words, any of you?
Yeah,
I could even show some of you the translation, but the translation is not very inspiring, actually. I think you better just know the original.